Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Imagine my surprise when I started watching this movie and I was like, wow, this is really close to what I had been reading in the Bible back
then. Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Tak. Skål. Ved du hvad, Martin? Den smager sgu godt, den her. Det er synd, du er så fornuftig.
Skål. Det er det faktisk lidt. Men spørgsmålet er, hvad der i virkeligheden er fornuftigt.
Okay. Kommer der en tese nu? Skal vi høre et eller andet æble for dig nu?
Ja, men det er jo ikke mig. Altså, det er fordi, der findes en norsk filosof og psykiater.
Hello, everybody.
Hey!
What's going on? It is Recotopia episode 49, and today we are going to be doing another round. That is the movie's title, not another round. Like you, Jeremy, last week, I thought it was going to be about golf or blah, blah, blah. how are you doing today, Jeremy?
I'm doing all right. I spoiled a movie for a friend, but he is not angry. So I started out the morning feeling bad and guilty, but now I feel much better. I can't wait to talk about this movie.
Okay, good, good. All right. Well, do you have any? Sorry, chat. Hey, how's chat doing today? Chat is out here on Twitch and YouTube on a Tuesday watching us do this live. Slab asks me, how's my neck? I'm doing okay with my neck. I was playing for four or five hours last night, The Last of Us on our Twitch stream. That was a lot of fun. I'd never played the game before. So anyway, thanks for all y'all who came out to watch me play that last night. So anyway, do you have any small recommends, Jeremy?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
I do. It's almost like I knew you were going to ask me that. Yesterday, in fact, 2 days ago, in fact, I happened to catch a 1999 movie I hadn't seen since 1999, But I'm a Cheerleader. I think I've heard you talk about
I've never seen this.
What's that?
I've never seen this.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm wrong. I thought you had brought it
up. Well, you may have caught up in the conversation at one point where we almost got to interview the director of this movie because there was a 20th anniversary edition or something like that coming out, and it didn't come to fruition. But I would have watched it then. I've never seen it. Yeah, this is a movie that it's on my list. I need to see it.
It is. I'll tell you right now, I was shocked to see that it's 49 on Rotten Tomatoes, which was it 49? 42. Ooh, it's even worse. That doesn't make any sense to me, because if you do a little Googling, you will see that, and I am by no means a spokesperson for the gay community, but this movie is one that is, from what I read, adored by the gay community. And it's a 6.7 on IMDb, which doesn't really track with the Rotten Tomatoes score. But this is about Natasha Lyonne, who is having a Lyonnaissance right now with Russian Doll series and now this new Rian Johnson show, Poker Face, that's going to be on Paramount Plus? Peacock?
Well-deserved. Natasha Lyonne is awesome. I think everybody sort of understands that and has finally understood that after many years. Yes,
she is the star of this movie. She's a cheerleader. She's dating a jock. She doesn't like kissing him, though. And she ends up looking at the other cheerleaders more. And she loves This is a dark comedy. She loves Melissa Etheridge, so her family assumes she's gay and stages an intervention for her and sends her off to a gay conversion camp. Some famous people who are in this, Michelle Williams, really young. Melanie Linsky, really young. Clea DuVall, really young. RuPaul, younger. Kathy Moriarty runs this camp where they're trying to convert them. And the first thing they have to do is get her to admit that she's gay. And she's like, I'm not gay. And it doesn't take very long before she realizes that she is gay. And from there, there's just a lot of comedy, a lot of hijinks. The ways they try and rebel are kind of hilarious. It's got a Tim Burton kind of look and feel in terms of the sets and the music. And I laughed all the way through it. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's on Paramount Plus and Showtime right now, if you want to give that a look. But it's But I'm a Cheerleader.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I need to watch this. This is, like I said, it's one of those that comes up every once in a while, every few years. And it's like, oh, yeah, I've forgotten that I haven't seen that yet. So, yeah, I need to watch that for sure. So a couple weeks ago, I watched for the first time. This is going to be surprising to you, Jeremy. I'm not saying this sarcastically, but the first time I ever watched Martin Scorsese's The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what you think of this movie.
I think I had an internet issue this for a second. I had been told, because I was a young Christian at the time this movie came out, that this was blasphemous and that, like, you know, that this is not the story of Jesus, that we know it and blah, 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 blah. Imagine my surprise when I started watching this movie and I was like, wow, this is really close to what I had been reading in the Bible back then. Like, eerily close. And I don't know what it was. I don't know what it is about this movie, what Scorsese does here, but you know how you watch a lot of religious movies, especially movies about Jesus, and there's just something about, it's either the production value or it's the way they convey the messages or whatever, that they are like afraid to make anything badass or serious or whatever. It's just all like, it's, I don't know, it's always la 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 something, I don't know, whatever. There's like actual serious discussion in this movie, a lot of this movie is just like people talking and stuff, but it's just riveting all the way through. Willem Dafoe plays Jesus Christ in this movie. Harvey Keitel plays Judas. There's even a cameo by David Bowie in this. I think he's playing Pontius Pilate. And it's pretty straightforward. The only time it's not straightforward, and this is something that you alluded to in when you watched The Green Knight, is that there's a point where he is about to die on the cross and an angel saves him and he lives his life not having been sacrificed. And he takes Mary Magdalene as a girlfriend and a wife, and he has kids, and he sees what his life is, you know, after, when he doesn't die on the cross and everything. And then, of course, it pulls the rug out from under you, and you find out that he's been thinking about this on the cross the whole time. And so I guess you can't have any creative liberties with, like, you know, what could have happened, because they would have put that in the Bible, I guess, if they really wanted to. Like, this is what would have happened. Like, I guess the Bible was supposed to be a multiverse type of thing. You can't have any kind of creative input.
I think the backlash, as I remember, was like a lot of religious backlash to films. It happened before the film even came out. It was like doing it in advance. I don't think a lot of people who talked out against it even saw it. And if they did, they didn't understand it, because it's, again, I'm not a person of faith anymore, but if I were, this movie would make me feel even stronger about it, to consider that, you know, all my life I was taught Jesus died for my sins. While he was on that cross, I'm part of what he was doing that for.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that he had an opportunity or even a vision, even some non-sacrificial desire in his brain, but still chose to do it, I think makes it more powerful. And I don't know what the religious people were all upset about.
My jaw practically dropped to the floor watching this thing, going, wow, this is like really sensitive and really like just a more serious adaptation of this, of these stories, like something that we could all benefit from by watching it this way instead of this whole, like, I don't know what, like I said, I haven't been able to study religious films enough to know what is the deal with them. Like what makes all those things like so like unserious a lot of times? Is it just the production value? Is it just the acting? Cause there's some serious actors in this.
Yes.
And then, you know, and then you get stuff like Passion of the Christ, which is like, it's more like, well, let's see how dirty and violent we can get. And like, it just, there's a little bit too much going on there. Like, you know what I mean? This one's a more deft handling of the whole thing. And yet people went out in droves to watch Passion of the Christ.
Passion of the Christ only made the money it made because churches rented out theaters by the dozens. I mean, all over the country. Every church scheduled some kind of screening or joined up with another one. And actually, Mel Gibson, who I can't really tolerate much anymore, was very savvy about marketing this because he went to major cities and gathered clergy and showed them the film. And then they went back to their congregations and were like, you're going to want to see this. This is powerful. It's really, really smart grassroots marketing. But I think a much harder film to watch. And for me, does not underscore the love of Jesus quite the way Last Temptation does. And I did not even realize until today that you did not get my Green Knight, the Last Temptation of the Green Knight joke.
Like
a year ago or whenever I made it. That was a really good joke.
I gleaned into that was what was happening when that sequence started and everything. But I did, you know what? I kind of forgot a little bit. That's how good the movie was. Mm. I kind of forgot. I was like caught up in the like, oh, this is different. Okay. They did take some liberties or whatever. And then like, as it got closer, I was like, oh yeah, this is something that Jeremy was saying, like in the Green Knight, like that whole, like, you know, saw what his life would be if he didn't do that. Or it's the double ending where it's like, well, it could have gone this way, but it's really going this way or whatever. Yeah. So, anyway, I recommend it, for those of you, this was like a glaring hole in my Scorsese filmography. So, really good stuff.
And I probably saw this. I saw this in college, I'm sure, with Josh. Mm-hmm. And I probably only barely knew Scorsese, Goodfellas. That's probably all I knew at that point. I'm such an infant in film. Yes, my shirt, by the way, is an Aliens reference. Yeah, Jonesy the cat. Somebody in the chat asked. it's one of my favorite shirts ever. My second small recommend. I'm so glad you liked Last Temptation. Is a brand new 3-4 days old true crime documentary on Netflix called The Hatchet Wielding Hitchhiker.
Ooh.
my wife is on an incredible binge of true crime documentaries and docuseries. She's been at it for 3 or 4 months. And every Sunday we try and watch a movie together. And I was poking around at what's new on Netflix and saw this, and now she's into true crime, so I suggested it. And it's only like a 10-year-old story, but it still feels like an odd time capsule. This guy you see here on the screen, his name is Kai, and he went viral because there was a car accident where a vehicle drove into like a fruit stand or something and hit somebody. And then some women came over to try and help that person, and the driver got out and started beating the women. The passenger was this hitchhiker here, Kai, who had a hatchet with him. And he ran after the driver, and hit him over the head 3 times, once with the sharp end, incapacitated him, and the news shows up right about then and interviews him. And he is a skateboard-loving surfer bro who seems to have this genuine, like, love of life and people. Like, the reporter asks him a question, and the kid says, "But before I start, I just want to tell everybody out there, you're worthwhile, no matter what mistakes you've made, no matter who you've been in the past, you are worthy of love." And then he says, "Okay." And then he tells a story, but he's like, "Bro, man, like, I got up and then I was like, smash, smash." And he's so animated and such a character that he went viral like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did their news report. This was just a local affiliate in whatever the hell state this happened in. It might have been California, Oregon, something like that. And the reporter decides to upload the whole 6 minutes instead of just what made the news. And the next morning, that has 500,000 views and is racing up. And that's him being viral. Instantly, a whole world is trying to get a hold of this guy and interview him. And only this one local affiliate reporter, who was a sports reporter that was sent out for the first time to cover a car accident instead of sports. Mm-hmm. Only this guy has this dude's phone number. The Jimmy Kimmel Show wants him. The Kardashian producers want to do a reality show with him. And as even the description will tell you of this movie, it gets dark. He ends up being arrested for murder. And the way the film, it's a pretty good documentary. I'm much more interested in the story than the particular filmmaking here. But I do appreciate how they circle back after we've learned some of the horrible things he's done to the things he said in that first interview. Whatever mistakes you've made, you're worthy of love. And you realize he's talking to himself as much as anyone else. It's an hour and a half. It's a really bizarre story. They got to interview a lot of people connected to the story. They did not interview Kai, but they interviewed everybody who came in contact with him. I thought it was pretty entertaining. So there you go.
did I miss the detail here or what? But I'm sitting here thinking, did someone pick up Kai and he was holding a hatchet at the time?
He was a hitchhiker and he had a hatchet in his bag.
I feel it was in his bag. He wasn't just like holding it out like, "Hey, give me a ride."
No, it was in his bag. He had a big backpack.
Okay. I'm sitting here thinking of this guy like holding a hatchet and the car comes by and like, "Yeah, come hop on in."
Yeah, that is a crazy picture. But I mean, even the driver of that vehicle, there begin to be some questions. Nothing is as it seems in that first news report. And I appreciate those kind of documentaries that take something that seems interesting or weird, and then like that tickling documentary that just goes,
yeah. That oh my god, that tickling documentary. Oh god, seriously, that just shows how bizarre this world is a lot of times, and it's reason why a lot of times I don't jump to conclusions about any story that comes out, because you just never know when it's just pure psychosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so, oh my god.
Yep.
We might want to like full recommend the tickling documentary.
Oh man, people are going to be so uncomfortable.
Oh my god.
We should at some point. I'm going to add it to my list.
All right. So I was looking at the Sight and Sound top whatever it was, the Criterion's got a whole bunch. The Criterion Channel's got a whole bunch of these on their channel right now, and one of them is a 1990 Iranian film called Close Up, and it is a really interesting way to do a biopic slash more heavily documentary than biopic type of thing. It is about a man who is posing as a famous Iranian filmmaker, who has found his way into somebody's house and is pretending like he needs their house for his next movie. and he's going to put all the people in the family in his movie and everything. And that's what we hear right off the bat. There's a reporter who gets into a cab and he tells the whole story. He's like, yeah, there's this guy. And that's this way the story is told. It's not like you see this guy who's doing all this, whatever this he's posing as this guy. You don't see any of that. You just see a guy, a reporter saying, yeah, I'm going to check on the story. This guy told me that this stuff's going on. I'm going to check it out. So they arrest the guy. And a lot of this movie is this dude in court, and it's his actual court like appearance in the movie, saying, this is what I was planning on doing. This is what I needed. This is what my goal was. And then the family is like, you know, he obviously was, you know, trying to perpetuate a fraud and maybe possibly take money or be a burglar of some sort and whatever, but he's not on trial for burglary. He's on trial for impersonating this famous director, which I looked up this famous director, and this just shows you how freaking sheltered we are sometimes. This guy is like considered like one of an all time great, and I have never heard of him before.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm going to look into, his movies at some point. Let me look up this guy's name real quick. The name is Mohsen Makhmalbaf. Makhmalbaf is his name, and he's a famous Iranian director, and he's done a lot of like stuff. The whole movie is like trial stuff. And then there's some like some sort of like reenactments by the people who were the actual people in the movie. So there's like stuff where it's like shows him on a bus talking to this woman who's a part of this family. And he is, he's reading the script from this movie that this guy made. And the woman's like, oh, I really love that movie. It's called The Cyclist or whatever. He's like, I really love that movie. And he says, oh, thank you. I made that movie. And then he signs the copy of the screenplay and gives it to her. And it starts this big, huge fraud. And you go through this whole thing wondering, what was the point of all this? you hear some of his reasons. And you're like, okay, that sounds like a perfectly, I mean, not, you, nobody would do this. I mean, nobody normal would do this, but that sounds like a perfectly reasonable explanation. But then you're like, is he still perpetuating a fraud of some sort in court? Is he just saying that just because? You start learning a lot of details about his life and what might motivate him to do this type of thing and whatever. And the family's like acceptance of this guy for a while is really interesting too. When the guy gets arrested, the father of the family is like, oh, well, we knew all along that he wasn't that guy, but we just blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you knew all along. it's one of those things. It's a fascinating movie. It's an hour and a half. It's got an 8.2 on the IMDb that I think is well deserved. It's just an unusual movie considering how it's done. At first you're like, I thought this was a biopic, and then you realize, maybe they just shot it like a documentary, but there's stuff that's documentary and there's stuff that's reenactment with the real people that make you go, oh, okay, so this is real. And by the end of it, the real director shows up and has a talk with this guy.
Oh my gosh.
And everything. So
oh my.
A lot of fun. I mean, a lot of like intrigue in all of that. I was very surprised at this movie. I'd never heard of it before. Yeah, I recommend it today.
All right. Groovy.
All right. On to the big recommend.
The big one.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Yes, the big one. This was this is a 2020 movie from Denmark called Another Round, starring Mads Mikkelsen. And I am going to be very interested to hear what you think about this movie, Jeremy, because you know you take your chances when the other person hasn't seen it,
right?
And everything. But I love the intriguing premise of this. It starts off as sort of a prologue to this whole thing, is like a bunch of kids running around. It's called the lake race of some sort or whatever. They drink, they have to like run around this course and drink and run around this course and drink more and so on. And you get points off if you vomit and you do all this stuff. So it's like a big thing, the lake race. And by the end of it, some of these kids have gotten on a subway and they handcuff a cop to a railing. And so the school that's has a lot of these kids is like, well, maybe we should have some restrictions about drinking. Maybe we're too permissive about drinking in this school and in this country and everything. This sort of is of the way of getting into the school, and four teachers who are friends at the school. One is Martin, played by Mads Mikkelsen. You have other guys in here. What is this? Frank is one of them, I think. Frank is a guy. Looking this up real quick. I know this is great radio, folks. And wow, the thing that I had up was not there anymore. So you have Martin, Tommy, Nikolai, and Peter are all in there. Tommy is the soccer coach or the football coach, whatever you want to go. Nikolai is a psychology teacher. And Peter is a music teacher. And, they go to, Nikolai's 40th birthday and they're having some drinks, and Nikolai brings up a guy by the name of, gosh, this is a tough one. This is a tough name. It's Finn Skarderud, I believe is the name. It's a psychologist who apparently famously said that people are born with less alcohol content than they should have. Like 0.05 is where you should be at all times. Apparently this is a misrepresented quote, by the way. It's not something that he actually said as a real thing. Or
I'm
whatever.
Glad to hear that. Yeah. To be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently is it pronounced Nikolaj? You have to you do the J and everything. I don't know.
I do.
yeah, you do the J. Yeah, you do. But they say, well, maybe we should try to have the appropriate amount of alcohol in our systems when we're teaching class. Now, Martin is our main character. We see him right off the bat. He has completely burnt out, and he's in a class talking about something. He's going on this tangent, and one of the students, this is interesting. I wonder if this is common in other places. Like in the United States, this would not be a thing that would happen. I don't think. But he's on some sort of tangent, and he says, and one of the students is like, weren't we talking about Winston Churchill? And he's sitting there talking about Western advancement.
Industrialization, yeah.
Yeah. And he goes, yeah, let's get back on to Churchill. And he starts talking about World War One and Churchill. And he's like, excuse me, what did you say? Did you say World War One and Churchill? And he's like, yes, of course, because Churchill, blah, blah. It's very matter of factly talking about Churchill and World War One. And the student just up and walks out. And then that leads to a whole bunch of students and parents getting together and saying, we can't afford you to be teaching our students when you're going to give them C's and C pluses and everything like that. And you're not even teaching the class properly. So he grabs on to this alcohol idea because maybe it'll be that last hope for him to be like, maybe he will be good or whatever. And so they all start doing this. They all start drinking before they teach their classes, and surprisingly, yes, Martin seems to be a lot more with it. He's like, he's making the class fun. And so it looks like he's turned a corner. And then the psychology teacher, he seems like he's turned a corner. The guy who's teaching the soccer kids, he's like, he's found somebody. They call him Specs in this one. I don't know how it translates in the Danish or whatever, but they call him Specs, and he's taken that kid under his wing. It's probably it's an arc that's the most heartbreaking of the whole movie, for sure. But he's taken this kid who's like not looked highly upon on this team, not given much of a chance, laughed at a lot, he's got glasses, the poor bastard, and he's trying to give him some confidence. And the music teacher is also seemingly doing better, but then they think, maybe we should try to do more than this. Which I think is odd, but they're doing it all as a part of an experiment. They think they need to do this like a scholarly way. And so that was their first attempt. Let's see what happens when you drink too much. And it starts to become apparent, like it becomes a problem when these guys are coming in a little bit more loaded than usual. They're like running into things, tripping over things, falling over stuff, and their home lives are starting to get a little bit like worse too. Now, Martin starts off like almost saving his marriage, it looks like, for a while. His marriage is kind of in a rut and is on the verge of about to being separated and divorced and everything like that. But his newfound success with this alcohol and everything has gotten him more confidence, and he's doing more things with the family and everything. But as he drinks more and more, it's actually becoming more of a problem than it is something that's helping out. And a lot of these guys are finding that the Nicol Lodge character has a young wife and like 80 kids. It's like a ton of kids. It might be only three kids, but it feels like 80.
Yeah.
And that's the way that movie is making it. And, and his marriage starts to get on the rocks as well. And the lonely Peter guy, and the lonely Tommy guy who's doing all the, I guess Peter's lonely too. They always joking about him not being able to get dates and things like that. But,
yep.
Tommy has gotten, he takes it to an entirely different level. He is obviously depressed, and he's veering towards alcoholism, I think, quicker than anybody on this thing. And it's gotten to the point where there are people finding alcohol bottles in the clubhouse, and he's having to say, well, I don't, you think kids could come in here and do this type of stuff? And it's getting very clear to the school that there are teachers or faculty who are drinking, and they don't know who it is yet. But this all comes to a head when Tommy walks in to a teacher meeting of some sort where they're trying to figure out who's been drinking. And he kind of ends up having to take the fall for all of his buddies on this. He walks in stumbling drunk.
Yep.
He gets fired immediately. Martin takes him home. They have a parting conversation that's really sad.
It is.
Tommy says, you guys don't have to come out here if you don't want to. You don't have to call me. You don't have to do anything. And his everything about his character has gotten to a really sad point. And so sad, it gets to the end of this movie, he gets on a boat with his dog and does not even put a life vest on. I think he puts a life vest on the dog, and then he goes out into the water, and you see all this stuff like cutting away, and it comes back to the boat, and just the dog is on the boat. It is a really, really sad part of this movie that I had forgotten for some reason. I had forgotten from the first time I watched it that that's what happened to him. And but it's a really sad thing. And it, of course, you see his soccer kid Specs in the back row at the funeral at the very end, and Specs puts the flowers on his coffin when they load it up on the car. So it's a really sad thing. But Martin is like his one last ditch effort to save his marriage appears to have failed. And he says some things he shouldn't when he's like super drunk one night, and it looks like that's completely over. But then there's like some very uplifting texting going back and forth at the end, because after he tries to get back together with her, and she's like, I can't believe you right now. We're just talking about what we're doing with the kids. We're not talking about getting back together and all that. He says, I really miss you. And then she sort of ends this conversation, but then later on she texts him with no context or whatever, with no other text before it, just saying, I miss you too. And then, yeah. And the psychology teacher, he gets back with his wife, and there's a whole new element apparently to the thing. The music teacher even finds love at the end. So they do a lot of like real positive stuff to like anchor that horrible tragedy that goes on with the other guy. And it has an ending. I don't know that you can interpret it in a lot of ways. He's drinking a lot at the end with all these kids who have graduated, and he's happy to be dancing around with these kids. These kids love him and everything, but he's just like dancing all over the place. And then he ends up jumping in the water by the end of it, and that's how the movie ends. And you have to sort of interpret it as are things really good? Does he need to
go ahead. I'm curious if you have a firm opinion on what you believe that ending means, because I do, and I googled, and I'm in the minority. Before we get to that, I think it's tragic. I think the ending is tragic. I think the ending, it appears that most people view it to be uplifting, in part because he has refused to do this jazz ballet dancing the entire movie when he's been asked. And in this final scene, he's asked, and he finally not only does it, but embraces it. Mads Mikkelsen was actually a former dancer, and you can tell in this scene. And I understand that interpretation completely. I really do. But he ignores a text from his wife and gets blasted, and then jumps into the water where his friend died. And I feel like this is it's gonna get him again. Like, he was there. He had his wife. She's texting, I miss you. Things are turning around. And he's like, let me down this entire bottle of champagne and start dancing and jump into the water with my clothes on and my phone in my pocket. Like, and I feel like the reason I feel like this is tragic is because he has a moment in the middle of the film that broke my heart, where they've done two phases of this alcohol experiment. The first phase was 0.05. Try and keep yourself at that. They've got breathalyzers. They've sneaking flasks. The second phase is, Mads just does it himself and comes into the meeting at like 0.11. And one of the guys is like, what were you at? You're teaching on fire or whatever. And he's like, it was like 0.12, 0.1. So they all do that. And then he goes canoeing with his family and camping for the weekend. And there's this title card where it says 0.0%. And he's being a great dad. Kids are having fun. His wife and him have sex in the tent. And this is, for me, a realization for him that I actually don't need alcohol to come alive again. It may have sparked what I've now become, but I don't need it. And so then phase three, they're all at one dude's house. And he says, I think we have to experience the whole spectrum. Meaning we have to at least go to the highest blood alcohol content possible. And they've been fudging the scientific method the whole movie, but there is no defending this as part of an experiment. And Martin immediately goes, this is the end of the line for me, guys.
Yeah,
I am out. They make this delicious-looking, sounding drink. They all drink one, and he is just about to leave. And they convince him to have a sip.
Yeah.
And then it's all downhill. And then by the next morning, his marriage is over and he's found out his wife was cheating on him. And it could have all been saved if he'd gotten out of that room right then. Like I wrote, one of my only notes I wrote, I was riveted by this movie. One of the only notes I wrote is this is like watching a slow motion car crash. Like even in the first hour when it's going well, there was this sense of doom for me that like a movie like this can't end by saying it went well then staying drunk every day. Like the movie has to be saying something negative about what alcohol can do to your relationships and your profession. But it does have a lot of laughs for a movie that is, in my opinion, quite serious in its message. There's that scene where they all get wasted. The wife is on her way out before they get drunk. And she says, don't forget to get fresh cod for tomorrow. And he goes, okay.
Yeah.
She goes, fresh cod. And he's like, fresh cod, dear. And she leaves and the guys are all like, fresh cod. Don't forget the fresh cod. So then they get absolutely obliterated. They go to a bar.
Nightmare.
One guy has lost his clothes, is playing the piano. And then they go to a grocery store where they are drool spit, fall over drunk. And somehow the grocery store guy understands fresh cod and says, no, we only have frozen. They knock some shit over and it hard cuts to them at the pier fishing for cod. And I had to pause it. I was laughing so hard.
And then it says something like, I'm going to catch a crab and then I'm going to use the crab to catch the cod.
And I mean, the movie, I think, plays well with the heavy and the comedic aspects. I think the end is meant to appear happy and hopeful, but underneath is this sense of foreboding and dread for me.
So you said you read, or you're saying in general you've read before where you think of an ending one way and everybody thinks the other way. Did you read anything about this ending at all? Like do people generally think this is a happy ending? Because
most people think this is a happy ending.
I'm with you, man. I don't think it is. There's something about the way this movie, unless the movie is sort of forgetting what it did in the previous, like you laid it all out, the reason why I think this is a bad ending. The whole thing about him realizing he doesn't need to drink, and then he goes back to drinking after they've told him, after he's told them, I'm done, I don't need to do this anymore, I'm gonna be with my family now, everything's cool. And then when he's getting texts, now he could have been already in the throes of drinking alcohol when he was drinking before the texts came in.
Yes,
but it doesn't. The text doesn't come in and then he's like, oh, I need to stop doing this now. He goes full on into it after that. Mm-hmm. And we could say that it's celebratory all we want to, but considering the message of this movie, him doing all this dancing and then jumping into the water at the end seems like a bad thing. Like it seems like he's hasn't learned a lesson there.
Right.
And that in fact, he was able to do all of this stuff without consequences in the end because she came back to him anyway. So like I got the same feeling about this. I got this feeling the last time I watched it too, that it wasn't as happy as the movie seemed to make it seem like, because it's giving you this false sense of security with her text saying, I miss you too, and we need to get back together, and so on and so forth. And, you know, maybe this is his last drink he's ever going to have. Maybe that's how we, or, I think, or his some last people, excessive drink.
Yeah. I think some people are interpreting it that way. I don't, why give us the scene of them being really awkward about ordering alcohol in the cafe, you know, if you're then going to say, this is only a celebratory, because once they see the students go by, they can't get out there fast enough. And mm-hmm. they know on some level those kids are wasted. The kids offer them alcohol and they take it readily. And within 5 minutes, they're all wasted. And mm-hmm. you know, I think the movie has a lot to say about alcohol. And I drink a little bit of wine every night. And I think everybody drinks alcohol for mostly the same reason, because it feels good. And, you know, there are dangers to drinking too much. And I think the movie is well aware of that. And I feel like the movie is saying, yeah, he's not going to get back together with his wife. She's going to see this is just going to, it's this demon has him now. And he's going to need help to get away from it. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed this movie. You never know when, like I said, when you have the other person hasn't seen it yet, they could interpret a lot of things differently and or just not connect to certain things. I am very happy that you connected with this. Okay, so what did you come up with as your double feature for this movie?
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
I really wish I could give you a huge surprise here. Because for a really long time, I wanted to find a movie about normal people who do a tiny crime and then get addicted to it and keep doing more crimes and then get busted. Because I felt like that would be a fun parallel, and I couldn't ever find anything that worked perfectly. And I see already Davis said Leaving Las Vegas. That was what I settled on for a good while. But I have decided instead the double feature will be Sideways.
Okay. Yeah. Good one.
My most recent viewing of this movie a month or so ago, it felt darker to me than, I mean, it's a fairly light movie in general, and you're meant to largely laugh. But I think Miles is a tragic character. And
yeah,
at the end, yes, the girl calls him back, and there's some sort of optimistic hope that they might get together. But all throughout the movie, we see that he talks a good game about loving wine for its qualities and yada yada, but he loves to just get wasted. The movie opens with him hungover, and his friend knows it. He can't help but go too far. No madman tonight, he says. And near the end, we see him. She has said to him that the day you open a bottle of blah 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 is the celebration itself. You don't have to save it. So he goes home from this wine trip and gets that fancy ass bottle of wine and goes to like Arby's or someplace and sits down in like a fast, and he's eating French fries with this expensive bottle of wine because he just needs to feel good. He does not like himself. I think there are a lot of parallels here, and I really like that there's alcohol theme under both, where the, you know, the excesses of it, you know, cause damage. They take their toll. I went with Sideways.
I love it. And I love the hell out of Sideways too. So yeah, this is a great choice. And I think that's a fantastic double feature. One that will leave you wondering what to feel by the end with alcohol, because they're both ostensibly comedies with drama mixed in. And it's Leaving Las Vegas is just straight up depressing drama.
Yeah, if he doesn't start that movie with the intention of drinking himself to death, that would be a double feature for another round. But these guys in another round don't really get there on purpose.
So what have you chosen for next week's homework?
Okay, kids, I am going to go way the F back in time to 1949.
Holy crap.
And I'm going to recommend a movie that my mother showed me and I laughed my ass off as a child. And it's The Inspector General.
Oh, okay. I've never seen this.
This is Danny Kaye. I think people quote and talk about Court Jester from this same era a lot more often than Inspector General. They're both great. Court Jester's amazing. But I am happy to an extent that you haven't seen this. Danny Kaye is one of the stars of White Christmas. I grew up watching that movie twice, three times a year with my mom. She loved it. She loved Danny Kaye. So she started showing me other Danny Kaye movies like Court Jester and Inspector General. This is about a snake oil salesman who's an idiot who ends up in this town that mistakes him for a government official, the Inspector General. And it, in many ways, comes with lots of, you know, pomp and circumstance and gifts and a fancy room and meals. But the townspeople are corrupt, and so they're trying to assassinate him. And there are several botched assassination attempts. And then the real Inspector General comes to town. There's comedy music. There's John Ritter-style slapstick stuff. And I have not seen it in probably 20 years. So it's going to play very new to me. You can watch this movie. I looked this up. You can watch this movie on Plex. You can watch this movie on Philo and Fubo. Some of these feel made up, Google. On the Roku channel with a premium subscription, on Amazon Prime with a regular subscription, or on YouTube with a prime time subscription. It's 1949's The Inspector General, musical comedy, and I haven't seen it in a long time. Last time I saw it, I loved it, and I hope I still do, and I hope you guys don't hate it. So there you go.
All right, The Inspector General, that's going to be a brand new experience for me, and I can't wait. All right. Do we have some time for some questions?
I think we do. Any questions?
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
I'm going to skip the first one about cats.
Okay.
What are some examples of when mediocre is worse than bad?
So Ridley Scott's Kingdom of Heaven, the theatrical cut, when you have that kind of a pedigree going into a movie that looks so luscious, and the trailer for Kingdom of Heaven is amazing. And then you go in and you watch it and you're like, oh, that was okay. That's where it seems like it's worse than bad at that point. Like, it would have been fine if it was terrible, but the fact that it's just like almost there, almost good, that's where it sucks. And I also put in Ron Howard's The Missing.
Ooh.
I haven't seen that movie since it came out, but that was another one that I felt like was just on the verge. It like had all the ingredients, and it just was never outstanding. So so that was another one that I thought of in that instance. But anyway.
Interesting. It's funny that you went with a Ridley Scott movie, because I did too. American Gangster with Russell Crowe and Denzel, which a gangster movie from Ridley Scott with Denzel and Russell Crowe should be outstanding or laughably bad. There is no middle ground here, and that's exactly what they did. They made it mediocre and long. I have only watched that movie once. I've seen pieces of it since then. There's one or two scenes with Denzel that I really like, because Denzel's always fun. But that to me was pretty mediocre. I also wrote down
I felt the same way about that movie. Yeah, American Gangster, I felt the same way about. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're all right. Pushing 10 was the other one I came up with, which
felt
like it had an interesting premise. And what we get is, I think, some lazy performances and a wife swap storyline.
Yeah.
And then we get almost a wedding singer ending in the plane.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah, so it was just, I can enjoy a movie that's just god-awful. I really can, if it's god-awful in a fun way. But mediocre is worse than bad in those two instances. All right.
Yeah.
Here's a interesting question, considering they're going to make a sequel. If you wanted to remake Face Off to make it into something vaguely watchable, like Face Off is not already watchable, who would you cast in the two lead roles?
I had to, when I read this question, I was like, are they saying that the original Face Off isn't watchable, or are they saying if you remade Face Off,
like, I see,
how would you make it vaguely watchable? I don't know, but I'm going to tell you how you do. You put in, you put in Timothy Oliphant playing the Travolta character, and then you can play Walton Goggins as the Cage character. And so you have a justified reunion. Dude. And honestly, again, just like in Face Off, you can probably switch those two characters if you wanted to. But I feel like Oliphant is more of the family man who can play the Slack Cage slash Travolta, who's inside of Travolta at the end, but you know, during the most of the movie. And then I think Goggins should play the guy who is Nicolas Cage, and maybe not going in a priest outfit and doing all the Nicolas Cage-isms that he does at the beginning of that movie. But I can put his own like psychology into that character, and then become the sensitive person who's inside the wrong body through most of the movie. So I think both could play both probably, but that's the way I saw it.
I really don't think Travolta does a Nick Cage once they've switched faces. He just
not
does
really. He's just evil. He's Travolta. Just his usual. Yeah, he's just like his Broken Arrow Travolta.
Yeah, he's like Pop's got a brand new bag.
Yeah,
and I'm like Cage's character, Castor Troy, never did anything like that in the times that we've seen. So it's funny that you went with a reunion of Justified. I'm going with a Hell or High Water reunion, because Ben Ooh. Foster has to do the Nick Cage role, and okay. Chris Pine in the Travolta role would give them both a chance to play the other one's specialty. But we got to give that opening scene to Ben Foster, because I think he could out crazy Nick Cage potentially.
He could.
So that was my suggestion. Do we have any in the chat?
It looks like Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling is up there. Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt.
That would be an
Chris Pratt and John Krasinski. but Dave, who suggested that, goes, "Oh, you wanted watchable." and then Slab says Ryan Reynolds and Ana de Armas, bam, $700 million domestic.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, Dave says Chris Evans and Hemsworth, any of them really? So there you go. Yeah, some good choices there.
All right, I think that'll probably do it for today.
Okay, that's gonna do it for this week. The Inspector General is the movie for next week. Once again, would like to thank everybody in chat who came out today to watch us live and give us some feedback and everything, and really appreciate you guys coming on week by week. It makes the show better, I believe. But anyway, we're going to see you next week, and see ya.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Outtakes are just going to be me talking to me. How did you like The Last of Us?
I like it so far. Because of all the technical difficulties and things like that going on through the stream, I wasn't able to follow a lot of the story stuff going on. I know that story is very important to that game, but like there were things happening where I like the best time to hear whether you've got sound problems or not is when they're talking, and so like I would pause it while they were talking, and then I'd come back after a whole bunch of stuff and I'm like, what were they talking about again? I don't remember.
Right.
But I get the sense that they're smuggling this little girl with vaccine possibilities, and that's the basic gist.
That is basically correct. Yeah.
So
yeah, this is probably, just for me personally, I guess a lot of people are like this, but this is probably the best video game story I think I've ever played. And I actually could have enjoyed, like, what's one of those games where it's, it's a story and there's like no action, there's no fighting, you just make choices.
Mm-hmm.
I could take this game like that without having to fight any of the zombies, maybe doing some sneaking.
Yeah.
But the story's that strong. The second one is just as good.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was dying 100 times in a row, and I was kidding, unmercifully taken to task for that, because I guess everybody who's ever played this game beat it in one sitting. I don't know.
No, actually, I saw a tweet yesterday of a guy who said, is the HBO version of The Last of Us going to have him die 100 times and then rage quit? Hey, I spoiled Glass Onion for Patrick.
Oh, really?
And I haven't even seen Glass Onion. but we were talking about it. He asked if I'd seen it, and I said no. And he shared some thoughts and said, you know, the mystery's kind of boring so far, but it looks pretty. I'm liking it. And then later on, I said, yeah, I haven't seen it, but, you know, I already know what happens. He's like, oh, well, I wasn't going to, like, tell you the who and the done it. Mm. And then I said, well, I know, blank.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I'll let you know when I finish it. And I was like, oh, no.
Well, he said he had seen it.
I mean, I didn't have the same reaction when our co-manager Laura spoiled The Sixth Sense for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't mad.
Well, and that's because in The Sixth Sense, it's just, you're not really, you're not in M. Night world yet, and you know we don't know what M. Night is as a director yet, and you don't know that there's a surprise coming. You just think it's a horror movie. So
yeah,
so that surprise is like you know, one of the best things ever, and to have somebody spoil it for you before you go in and watch, it doesn't ruin that it's a good movie, but it does ruin your first ever experience with it, which is so crucial a lot of times with whatever you watch.
There is one thing about M. Night that I really respect, which is that somehow, and it's mostly to do with Glass from what I understand, he just funds his own movies now.
Hmm.
He made Glass with his own money, and that movie made bank,
mm-hmm.
and he took it all, and then I think he made that old movie that I hate.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that.
Oh, geez, you're not missing anything. Mm. But then he's got this cabin, Knock at the Cabin movie.
Yeah.
Looks interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's made a lot of films that I really like, but I do respect that he kind of Tyler Perry'd himself and just became his own studio.
Yeah.
even Coppola is doing this, is it Coppola?
No, well, it is Coppola, but it is Coppola. But Aaron on the private chat was like, "Old is good, fight me."
Oh my god! Oh my god, Aaron. We will talk later. Oh well, he's using his wine profits to fund this Megalopolis movie that mm-hmm. has been his passion project.
Yeah,
I think that's awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, he's probably got way more money than his wine profits, but to put sure. that much of your own money on the line to bet on yourself, I think is pretty awesome.
But also, apparently, that's not surprisingly, it's having all sorts of problems getting made.
Well, I read that, and then he came out 2 days ago and said, ha ha ha, just wait and see. So
okay.
I don't know if that's him denying the rumors or saying, you know, I don't, maybe that's just the way a 90-some-year-old guy responds these days.
I don't know. Honestly care whether or not, like, if you finish the movie, you know, it doesn't really matter how much chaos there was, right? I mean, I guess you,
right.
I mean, if you finish it, it usually, you know, a lot of times movies made with all that chaos end up being great. But God, how, like, you know, how frustrating that is probably to, like, have a bunch of people and you're like, we're going to film for 3 months. And then suddenly it's like, can you add an extra month to that?
Yeah.
You know, can you add another one? It's like, it just keeps going and going.
Well, and that Hollywood doesn't schedule that way, that flexibly.
No.
I mean, most of these people have already lined up other jobs
yep.
that they're going to go to. So
that's what sort of the Eyes Wide Shut thing was all about. Like, there were so many people in there that had to check out because the shoot lasted nearly a whole year and they thought they were only going to be there. Some people only thought they were going to be there for
a month or something like that, and then it ended up going past. And I think Kubrick told Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, just don't have anything ready for the next year. And they agreed to do that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.